Welcome to CRE Radio with Howard Klein, radio for and about the commercial real estate professional. Our focus is exploring issues facing landlords and tenants, property and asset managers, investors, brokers, lenders, and everyone in the industry. Our style is conversation over coffee with highly experienced commercial real estate professionals. Over 35 years, Howard's legal and commercial real estate practice has centered on broker, leasing, and property management issues. CRE Radio is presented with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our audience. Access our archive shows, upcoming schedule, and engaging articles at creradio.com or subscribe to the show on iTunes by searching for CRE Radio. And now, here's Howard Klein.
Well, welcome to CRE Radio. This is Howard Klein, and today's show is Demystifying Green Building Certifications and Protocols. Our featured guests are David Pogue, Nils Koch, and Chris Pike. Our call-in number is 619-393-6492. That's 619-393-6492. Press 1 to talk. You could also Twitter us both during the show and afterwards at CRE Radio, and you can leave comments on our website at www.creradio.com/sustainability. Why don't we start out by saying hello to my guests. Hello, David, Chris, and Nils.
Good afternoon.
Hello, Howard.
Hello.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining the show. And why don't we have each of you introduce yourself? David, why don't we start out with you? Give us the 30-second elevator intro.
30 seconds of me. I'm Dave Pogue. I'm the Global Director of Corporate Responsibility for CBRE. Prior to that, I was the Global Director of Sustainability. I come out of the property side, and I've spent the last probably 7 years working on sustainability matters in the built environment.
So that was a quick 30 seconds. So all my friends at CBRE say you can move up the chain very well, just like Dave. You just have to be as smart as him. Chris, why don't you give us a introduction about yourself and what you do at the USGBC?
Sure, I'll try to be as brief as Dave. So I'm Chris Pike. I'm the Vice President for Research at the U.S. Green Building Council in Washington, D.C. So my job is to keep track of market trends, engage in research collaborations, and generally move the ball forward with data and evidence-based practice at USGBC.
Well, thank you very much, Chris, and welcome to the show. Nils Koch. Nils, why don't you describe to us what you do and who you are with?
Well, I'll take some of the time that Chris and David left there. My name is Nils Koch. As you can already hear, I'm the foreigner here. I'm based in Amsterdam. I do two things. I'm an associate professor in finance and real estate at a place called Maastricht University. Maastricht is also known for the place where the Euro Treaty was signed, which, you know, we now look back upon with some regret, but that's for another conversation. I also had a company called GRESB, the Global Real Estate Sustainability Benchmark. That's going to be the focus of what I'm going to talk about today, so more about it later. But in very short, GRESB benchmarks the sustainability performance of REITs and property funds around the world and has been doing that for the last 5 years.
Well, Nils, thank you very much and welcome to the show. Chris, why don't we start out with you and let's ask the first question is why USGBC? Why did it even form in the first place?
Well, thanks for the question. So USGBC is enjoying its 20th year, which a lot of people are surprised. So USGBC has been trying to advance green building for the last 20 years. And at its core, USGBC is a membership organization. It's a group of organizations that felt the need for a practical and actionable definition for green building. And they got together for the purpose of creating and operationalizing that definition in the form of what we've come to understand as the Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design LEED rating system. And so the core of USGBC is this membership organization, which has spread to include almost 78 chapters around the United States, as well as a cadre of almost 200,000 professionals who are day-to-day engaged in green building. So that's what USGBC is, and its activities fundamentally are rooted in a sort of business-centric the belief that interventions like LEED can help the private sector move the ball forward and create a better buildings for people in the environment.
And how does it go about doing that?
Well, really, we have three types of interventions. One is creating the standard we call LEED. So basically creating a practical definition for what is a green building, what constitutes this thing. Because prior to USGBC, there were a lot of ideas about what constituted a green building, what were the elements of green building. And so we set that standard. We certify buildings against that standard. Since we are all in the real estate business, we understand from a trust but verify perspective that we need someone to say, hey, is there any given building living up to that standard? And at the same time, we educate and accredit individual people, individual professionals in those skills needed to carry out green building. So those are our fundamental ways. We also advocate, conduct research, and do other programs, but those are our bread and butter.
I'll ask you this, actually. Why don't I ask David this? And gentlemen, please step in and throw in your two cents as we're going along. What is a green building?
Oh, well, thanks. Give me the loaded question here. the difficult question here. I think that the whole kind of definition of green building has been evolving a bit over time. For statistical kinds of purposes, when we try to separate the green buildings from the non-green buildings, we typically will characterize those buildings or categorize those buildings that either have an Energy Star label, which is another rating protocol or a scoring protocol for individual buildings, specifically around their energy use. And so they have an Energy Star label, which puts them at the top 25 percentile of buildings in their peer group, or a LEED certified building. So, by definition, those are the buildings that we consider are green buildings. Now, there are characteristics of green buildings, and when Chris was speaking about LEED, LEED has a range of areas that you work in, around water, around energy, around building supplies, around things of that nature. And so buildings can have different components of those and qualify to be LEED certified. So within the whole category of green buildings, there really are a fair number of things that you really have to have, and it really revolves around water, waste, and energy, and then some other kinds of things around interior environment, green cleaning protocols, and things of that nature. So there's still a little bit of a fuzzy word around there around green buildings, but specifically we're looking for buildings that have demonstrated a better than average performance in the areas around water, waste, energy, and those things. And anyone else wants to add in?
Yeah, well, I'm sure that Chris certainly wants to add to this, but I also want to add location to the equation. So a green building is also a building that's located close to public transport, certainly when we talk about office buildings. So location is, I think, a very important part of the whole green building equation as well. And what's very important is that in the green building discussion, 10 years ago, green building was, you had an exemplary building, a unique building, a building that really stood apart from the crowd. And green buildings were not numerous. Nowadays, green building is almost mainstream. And in some markets, if you're not a green building, as attested to by labels like LEED and Energy Star, and we can talk about those labels later as well, you're standing out from the crowd. So I really want to stress that as much as it sounds exotic, green building, I think it's becoming more and more mainstream.
Yeah, I would add to Neil's comments that definitely green is becoming more the norm. I think if you're not green, quote unquote, or have sustainability characteristics, I don't think you can truly call yourself a Class A building anymore. I think those are characteristics now that are mandated if you're going to be in that category. But I might take a little exception to the conversation about location. Unfortunately, we can't typically move a building. So if we're in a city like San Jose, where I live, there's not a lot of public transportation. There's not a lot of options. But there are a lot of buildings that are working really hard to focus on matters of energy, waste, water, and the like. And they'll do some things around transit as best they can. But oftentimes, you have to live with what the kind of the infrastructure, the transit infrastructure that you were born in. And so I don't want to disqualify those buildings in markets that don't have transit and saying that they can't be green.
Well, so, Howard, I think can I just add one thing to that last piece?
Well, Chris, I want you to add that one thing right after we come back from this break, because you're really
absolutely
important to that. So why don't we take a short break, and when we come back, we'll hear more from Chris Pike on this issue of geography, and then I want to talk about whether or not green building, people can use the term green building, even if they're not certified.
The Institute of Real Estate Management believes good management matters and that well-managed properties pay big dividends. IREM delivers the power of knowledge and recognizes the importance of sharing it. IREM serves real estate professionals who manage all property types. They're dedicated to delivering cutting-edge networking and educational opportunities for every stage of your career. How can IREM help you? To count the ways, log on to IREM Orange County. That's IREMOC.org. Learn more today.
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Blocks CRE. Built by brokers for brokers, Building Blocks CRE is the dead simple, best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more. Easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit blockcre.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Blocks CRE. Easy to learn, easy to use. See for yourself. Log on to blockcre.com.
For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
Glad to have you with us today. Before the break, we were talking about how geography falls into the definition of a green building, and we left Chris holding his breath. Chris, take a breath and now give us your thought.
Absolutely. I just wanted to underscore that the dialogue that Dave and Nils were having about the role of location, and I think it perfectly exemplifies why the LEED rating system and other green building systems allow a degree of flexibility so that folks can work within their span of control to make essentially whatever property they're dealing with greener. And so we definitely have points and structures within LEED to recognize superior locations, those that reduce vehicle miles traveled, encourage alternative transportation, dense walkable areas. Those are clearly green choices. At the same time, we also realize other space types that green can apply to other space types. Take warehousing and distribution, where the definition of a sustainable location may not fit the sort of office building, walkable downtown CBD type model. So just trying to articulate, that's exactly why we build in flexibility. That's exactly why there is no single definition of green. There's a language to talk about green. So that's a perspective.
I like the language concept. Can any owner of any building say that their building is green? And let me tell you why I say this. I saw an advertisement, I think it was up in Seattle, about an apartment building that was a green building. It wasn't certified by anyone. It didn't have, as far as I could tell, there wasn't anything about it except they had bicycle racks. Can anybody call themselves green? Chris, why don't you do that?
Sure. I'll toss at that. I think that anyone, I mean, everyone, we have a First Amendment. You can claim whatever you like. I think, however, I think that when we're making decisions about real estate, we have to ask, we can have a sharper eye and ask ourselves, what are you saying when you're green? And whether you're kind of being legalistic about it and worrying about something like the Federal Trade Commission, which establishes something called the Green Guide and basically gives some standards standards for making green claims, or whether we're just a public company and we're asking, you know, hey, we're going to have to stand behind these claims when our customers come asking what the basis is. And so I think that, yes, anybody is welcome to make a claim. I think that a wise consumer is going to ask, what's the basis for that claim? Again, we're real estate. We want someone else's validation that that's true. What language are you using per the conversation we were just having of saying, you know, how are you describing those green features? What do you mean by energy efficient? What do you mean by good location? What do you mean by saves water? What do you mean by non-toxic? Those are fairly, each of those has some nuance to it. So yes, anyone can make a claim, but there's a body of professional skill in this as well.
Well, I think that is very important. Nils, you know, while you're not the representative of the USGBC, we previously had discussed the issue of transparency. Why don't we talk about that? Because I think the issue of transparency and how that leads to benchmarking, that's important to both GRESB and USGBC, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And Howard, I was exactly 1 hour ago listening to Sam Zell, who you will certainly know and who the audience most likely will know. Sam Zell is the godfather of the REIT industry in the United States. And Sam Zell looked back at 20 years of REITs, kind of 1993 being the big transition for the REITs as we know them today. And for those that are not familiar with REITs, Real Estate Investment Trust, those are listed property companies and prime vehicles for large institutional investors to gain exposure to the real estate market kind of through a liquid vehicle. And one thing that Sam said was transparency and the importance of transparency to investors. And in my view of the world, and that's very much the institutional view of the world, the pension fund view of the world, transparency is key. If I'm a pension fund located in California or a pension fund located in Florida, and I want to invest in real estate, I cannot touch that real estate on a day-to-day basis. So I got to trust whether it's the REIT or whether it's the fund manager or whether it's the GP to manage my real estate in the best way. And I got to trust them with my money. And I'm only going to trust the parties that are transparent. Now, transparency can be there at the asset level. So that's where a lead comes in, and lead gives you additional information about an asset. Like a mile per gallon sticker on a car gives you additional information on how that car will serve you. And lead does that when it comes to environmental issues, when it comes to social issues, and you know, sometimes when it comes to locational issues.
Well, Nils,
but when you think about
Nils, let me interrupt you a second. How does the transparency, what do we mean by transparency as it relates to sustainability? I mean, what is transparent? And I think that's part of what USGBC and GRESB is about. What does that transparency mean? Specifically,
transparency means providing information on characteristics that are otherwise intangible. And that might be a cryptic way of describing it, but it's very simple. If you do not make transparent the energy performance of an asset, if you do not make transparent the sustainability performance of a REIT, how can an investor, how can the capital market basically price that in? So transparency basically means bringing characteristics to light, standardizing characteristics that are otherwise very hard to measure. So what LEED does at the asset level and what GRESB does at the portfolio level is basically providing light into a topic that's otherwise, I think, hard to describe, hard to measure. So really quantifying something that at the end of the day has impact on the financial performance of assets and portfolios.
Yeah, and I would add, Howard, here, this is really, it goes to the core of the question that you first asked about, I've seen a building, they claim to be green, but all they have are bike racks. Effectively, what's happening in the marketplace is that there are becoming these protocols, things like LEED, things like GRESB, that are helping people differentiate between the claims and the reality. And so that's why I think LEED has certainly become very important. And it was not only because it created a protocol for helping you move your building toward sustainable or green, but it also then gave you a third-party validation that, in fact, it had been done. And so somebody could count on that, because to the same extent that, that Nils is talking about, fund managers are looking to demonstrate that they're green for their investors. Oftentimes, buildings need to demonstrate very specifically and correctly that they have these characteristics because occupants are now beginning to seek these buildings out. We have a number of clients, and there are people, there are companies all over the world now who are engaged in sustainability themselves. These are corporate entities, companies that have developed sustainability characteristics or goals that they're committing to. And one of the things that they very early on recognize is that real estate is really at the core of a lot of the sustainable activities. It's where their waste is, it's where their water use is, it's where their energy and emissions come from. So in many ways, real estate personifies their commitment to sustainable kind of activities. And so they are seeking and will look for and occupy sustainable buildings. And so they need a way to underscore and to make certain that the buildings that they're choosing, in fact, meet those characteristics. And that's where something like LEED comes in at a building level, because it gives them confidence at a third-party verified way that this building is, in fact, green, and it isn't just somebody who put bike racks out.
Yeah, so when you walk into a supermarket and you see, say, something that says diet, it'll actually mean something.
Exactly.
As an analogy. We'll be right back with more from David Polk, Nils Koch, and Chris Pike here on CRE Radio.
What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail, and it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com, create your own account, market your empty spaces, or view available locations for your business, all on one convenient site, PopUpInsider.com.
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. tacticsmagazine.com.
If you have questions or a point you'd like to make during the live show, call in at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue to speak live with Howard and his guests. That's 619 area, 393-6492. During the live show, then press 1 to be placed in queue.
And we're discussing demystifying green building certifications and protocols. Welcome back. And Chris, we're getting into a bad habit with ending with everybody else and starting with you after the break, but actually it's a fresh start. The question I have for you is, what is LEED certification and how does someone become LEED certified?
That's a great question, Howard. So, well, first we'll dispel a myth with this. So a person, an individual, does not become LEED certified. A building, an asset, becomes LEED certified. So LEED certification is a process for an asset, a building, or a space, or a neighborhood. An individual like yourself or myself, we become accredited, which means we have passed a test and learned some things about green buildings. So from a USGBC perspective, at least, we certify buildings and accredit people.
Why would someone want to become accredited?
Well, there's a couple of short answers to that. First is that being accredited is adding to your professional skill set and providing recognition that you have those skills. So there are a lot of idiosyncrasies, and not everyone. There are a few people in the world like Dave who are true experts in this, but there are a lot of people who are new entrants, and they need to know how to participate in a green building team, whether that's for new construction, existing buildings, or fit-outs. And so they might pursue green building training, and at the culmination of that training, they might receive recognition in the form of accreditation. And so that's one of the ways they'd add to their tool set. They can also bring benefits to their team, where their team gets recognition during the certification process for having accredited personnel as part of the team.
How do you become accredited? Is this an easy process, a hard process? Are there different levels? Well,
People who've gone through it, there's two different levels that we offer. One is it's called a Green Associate. That's the essentially the introductory level for folks who need familiarity, like appraisers, folks involved in valuation, brokers, who may need to be fluent in the language of green building, but not necessarily part of a project team at any given scale. So the higher level of accreditation is called a LEED Accredited Professional. There's about 188,000 of those out there today. So what happens is you take training from any of – there's dozens and dozens of companies out there that offer different kinds of green building training. And then the Green Building Certification Institute offers exams at centers around the world to prove your knowledge in that case. I think the current exam is most people feel it's fairly rigorous. So it's definitely something you have to study for.
I'll vouch for the rigorous part of it. Although I understand when we were talking preparing for this, I think Chris, you now said that there are 200,000 LEED APs.
Yeah, that's about right. That's about
so
right.
So I guess it's not exactly an exclusive club by any means. but to reiterate Chris's point, there is a language, there's a very specific kind of process to this, and it is not something that you intuitively know. So it does require some rigorous study to pass the exam.
Well, it sounds like I probably should have become an associate, at least for preparation of the show. As a matter of fact, now that we're talking about it, I most certainly will, since we're intending on doing quite a few shows on sustainability, since this is a project of CRE Radio. Nils, why don't we talk briefly about GRESB? First, I'd like to ask you the epiphany that you had. How did you come up with this idea? Because you're one of the co-founders, are you not?
Yeah, so 5 years ago, and all the credits here actually go to Chris and his colleagues at the USGBC. But 5 years ago, I was in New York and gave a talk for a couple of large pension funds on how sustainability measured by LEED or by Energy Star could have, and we found that it had through our research an impact on the financial performance of commercial real estate, offices, Class A offices, retail shopping centers, industrial real estate, multifamily buildings. And if you think about the capital market, pension funds, mutual funds, insurance companies, the long-term holders of real estate, and they realized, and I don't know whether there was that their epiphany moment at that point, but that sustainability could have an impact on the financial performance of their assets now, but certainly during the holding period of the REITs that they own, of the investments they have with fund managers. Now, where a LEED comes in at the asset level, so a LEED certificate can basically allow you to show to the market your green or sustainability credentials. At the portfolio level, LEED is a little less useful because at a portfolio, you have 20 buildings, 50 buildings. You can have hundreds of buildings if you're, for example, public storage. And for an investor to then understand the sustainability performance of that real estate portfolio, you need a different tool. And that tool is GRESB. GRESB stands for the Global Real Estate Sustainability Benchmark. That's a lot of words. So to say GRESB, GRESB. And what GRESB does is measuring sustainability, environmental issues, social issues, and governance issues, transparency at the REIT level or at the level of private real estate funds.
When you first started, there were a certain amount of buildings and REITs involved with GRESB. Is it a certification that you get in you participate in GRESB or what?
No. So how it works is that we have 50 large investors. And to give you an idea of how large an investor can be, the Norwegian Oil Fund has $600 billion in assets under management. And a large chunk of that is invested in alternative assets, which is within others real estate. When they invest in funds, because they don't invest in real estate directly, they require the fund managers that they invest with to submit data to GRESB. We take that data, we evaluate the data, and then we score the fund. So you don't get a certificate, but you do get a score. And that's where, again, transparency comes in, and that's where a quantitative approach towards sustainability comes in, because we will compare your score against the performance of other REITs and of other funds in the same property type in the same region or give that information back to the investor that can then use it either in due diligence or in engagement with their investments.
Well, we'll return with more from David Pogue, Nils Koch, and Chris Pike right after these messages.
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Blocks CRE. Built by brokers for brokers, Building Blocks CRE is the dead simple, best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit blockcre.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Blocks CRE, easy to learn, easy to use. See for yourself. Log on to blockcre.com.
Attention commercial real estate brokers and professionals. Have you ever struggled to find the true ownership behind a commercial property? What about finding the phone number, email, and name of the actual decision maker? ProspectNow.com tracks this information on more than 10 million commercial and multifamily properties nationwide. Howard's listeners are invited to a 3-day free trial. Simply go to ProspectNow.com and enter the promotion code Howard. That's ProspectNow.com.
If you have questions or a point you'd like to make during the live show, call in at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue to speak live with Howard and his guests. That's 619 area, 393-6492. During the live show, then press 1 to be placed in queue.
And we are back discussing USGBC and Gresby with our guests. And we last left off talking with Nils Koch. Nils, isn't there some potential, if not apparent, conflict of fiduciary duty that a fund manager would have in comparison, say, to sustainability?
Yeah, well, I think that's a great point and an important point. So as a money manager, you have a fiduciary duty. And what that means is maximizing return at a given a certain risk. And typically, if you would talk to a fund manager or a money manager about sustainability, that word fiduciary duty would come up immediately because, you know, how can sustainability go hand in hand with maximizing financial returns? Well, if you believe that energy efficiency enhances the value of an asset, and I'm sure that Chris and Dave can speak to this, then obviously fiduciary duty is not an issue here. Contrasting, if you don't take sustainability into account in your real estate investments, you're breaching your fiduciary duty because you're not optimizing risk return. You're exposing yourself to downside risk and you're not taking the advantage of the opportunities of energy efficiency investments. So fiduciary duty and energy efficiency, I would say, really go hand in hand. And as a money manager, as a fund manager, as a pension plan, you really are a good fiduciary if you integrate sustainability or energy efficiency into your investment decision-making in real estate.
David, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's been demonstrated now by a number of studies that were done, and Nils has done academic studies, and that was actually where I first met him. Other academics around the world have done studies, and that they consistently demonstrate that a sustainable building is a better building for occupancy, for rental rate achievement, and that ultimately relates to value as well. So to go back to your original question to Nils, I think, you know, from my own personal perspective here, I think that fund managers need to carefully evaluate sustainability as a way to enhance value on their assets. And in some ways, they may not be fulfilling their fiduciary responsibility fully if they don't look at that. Now, at the same time, we've moved past, and particularly in the building arena, we have moved past the point where people are doing this just because it's the right thing. Now, it is the right thing to do, and we could have a whole show about that. But what we've been working as an industry for the last several years to demonstrate is that it's not only the right thing to do, but it is the economically right thing to do. If you practice good conservation methods, effectively, what you're doing is that using less of things. You're using less water, using less waste, or creating less waste, you're using less energy, all of which translates to savings. So at its core, sustainability is about conserving money. And I don't know any real estate person who is not actively interested in that. So that's the point that we're trying to demonstrate, that not only at the asset level does it really work, but broadly, more broadly, we think that these buildings are, in fact, better performers in their marketplace, partly because they are sustainable, but partly in the sustainability aspect is because of the cost aspects and the like. But I don't think that there's ever a reason not to actively consider sustainability as part of your real estate kind of philosophy.
Chris, what are your thoughts?
Well, first off, I'll say one quick follow-up to things that Nils was saying earlier. I think that Nils has really been a trailblazer in helping us understand the financial value of green real estate, both at the individual asset level and increasingly at the portfolio level. And so I think that to Dave's point, I think that we've always felt that if we could create more transparency at the asset level, at the portfolio level, we could recognize and reward relatively superior pieces of real estate and let the market go to work. And that the biggest barrier was that lack of transparency made inefficient markets and limited the potential reward for these high-performing assets. And in a sense, that's all we're trying to do. And to the degree that by going through certification or labeling or communicating your success, that we are providing opportunities for high-performance real estate to get recognized in whatever dimension it's performing under, that's what we're trying to do. And obviously, when that happens, investors are wise to capture that value.
I recently read an article about how the Empire State Building had completed some retrofitting and has saved millions of dollars per year on energy efficiency. Have any of you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I think we're all pretty familiar, yeah.
Oh, good, please. I was hoping that I wasn't just throwing something out there.
What I wanted to add here is that that Tony Malkin with Malkin Properties or just IPO'd, so just went public with the Empire State Building and a number of other buildings. So you can now buy shares in the Empire State Building. You're going to buy shares in the building that a couple of years ago was actually a big renovation started. Really, to get a landmark to a green landmark, and not just in terms of its color, in terms of lighting at night, but really in terms of its energy efficiency, performance, and other sustainability characteristics. So, it's not the only landmark that has been undergoing renovation, also from a green perspective, but it's certainly a well-publicized renovation. And I think it's really good to show the world that, you know, you can retrofit buildings at financially really attractive rates.
I'll just build on that. One, my favorite thing about the, I think, a less understood part of the Empire State Building story is the way that building is getting greener literally every day. So the well-known story about Empire State Building was a fairly massive effort to improve the energy efficiency of the whole building, led by Rocky Mountain Institute and Johnson Controls and others, and they did some amazing work. What my team does some work to track the individual sort of green building activities that are ongoing at the Empire State Building. And what's amazing is that building has established some green guidelines for fitting out the office space. And every time it rolls over, literally running up and down the building, one fit out at a time, that building is getting greener every day. And we can see that as a track record dating back to 2006, 2007 time period on through today, one fit out at a time, everyone high quality and making the building greener. It's pretty cool, actually.
I want to add a couple comments. I was laughing a little when you started to say, have you heard of? It's a story that if you were in this business, it was impossible to ignore just because of the nature of it, the size of it, the audacity of it. But I will tell you that a couple points on a personal basis. First of all, I always tell people that I'm just sick to death of that story because it's not my story. You know, it's a great story. It's a great story. And every time that there's another news article about it or somebody else runs an ad, and there were a lot of people involved in it, so credit goes to a number of folks and companies. But every time that there's another full-page ad in the New York Times about this, I get calls from people throughout the company, but particularly in New York, saying, where's our Empire State Building story? So I have to just take a personal view on this, that I wish they'd just stop telling the story. But on the other hand, I think that having a building of such an iconic nature, and a building that wasn't a brand new building, obviously, this building was built in the 30s. So it demonstrates what any building can become. And to particularly then put this iconic face on it, in many ways, it really did kind of, validate in some ways is probably the wrong reason or wrong word to say, but in many ways, it certainly gave visibility in a way that a whole lot of little buildings, non-Empire State buildings, couldn't have done. And so I give them full credit for what they did. Again, jealous to some degree that it wasn't us who did it, but also acknowledging the fact that just by the nature of the iconic kind of history of that building, it gave a boost to the green building industry by its nature and by its size and by its age.
I'm sorry, David. I didn't mean to make you feel bad, and I was crossing my fingers. I asked the question assuming that you had all heard about it, but there was a moment where you all hesitated. I went, oh my gosh, did I just lay an egg? Listen, we're gonna have to take a break, at which time we are now going to hear from the people who pay our bills around here, and we'll be back, and I want to talk a little bit about David and CBRE when we come back.
Do more business with your biggest clients. Techniques Marketing has perfected exciting new ways to increase your revenue with all your key accounts, way beyond trial and error. And we've done it with some of the biggest companies in America. Look, if you're happy with your numbers, great. If not, let's talk. Visit TechniquesMarketing.com. T-E-C-H, that's the tech. N-I-Q-U-E-S, there you've got the Neeks. TechniquesMarketing.com. The Institute of Real Estate Management believes good management matters and that well-managed properties pay big dividends. IREM delivers the power of knowledge and recognizes the importance of sharing it. IREM serves real estate professionals who manage all property types. They're dedicated to delivering cutting-edge networking and educational opportunities for every stage of your career. How can IREM help you? To count the ways, log on to IREM Orange County. That's IREMOC.org. Learn more today. For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com, on Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619 area 393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
Well, welcome back to CRE Radio, and we are now going to ask David Pogue, How did CR, I mean, you are a very visible player in the sustainability area now. How did you and CBRE embrace LEED or LEED?
Well, you know, I don't know that I'm so visible, I guess, maybe to some degree, but CBRE, obviously, this is a position in an area that we have to be involved in, I mean, almost by default. We are the world's largest real estate services company. We manage almost 750 million square feet property managed here in the United States. Overall, we manage more than 3 billion square feet of space globally. So as it became apparent a number of years ago that sustainability and environmental issues were more and more important in the built environment, it was really necessary that we as an organization get involved. I like to say that we had both an opportunity and an obligation to get involved in sustainability. So from a very early on, and to say very early on, there were many people earlier than this, but 7 or 8 years ago, we began looking at the overall landscape of sustainable practices and sustainability and tried to figure out in our own mind which of the protocols, which processes that we ought to bet on, if you will, because we didn't want to create anything new. We wanted to take something that was open source and open protocol and really put our scope and scale behind it. We did that to a great degree with EPA Energy Star. That was the first place where we started, and we now have about 1,500 buildings that are benchmarked. But then when we saw LEED, and particularly LEED-EB, beginning to formalize and to become a big issue, we determined that this was also an area that we need to effectively place a bet. And so we got involved with USGBC early on the LEED-EB program. We now, through our own efforts with our own teams, have done almost 200 LEED-EB certifications, which I think put us as the number one organization that's done those. And then as we advanced that, But then also, because I knew Nils and I saw what was happening on our ownership side, we also early on embraced the whole matter of GRESB, because I thought that this was yet the next sophisticated kind of protocol that was going to be working through the real estate business. And fortunately, we won our bet with EPA, we won our bet with LEED and USGBC, and I think we won our bet with GRESB as well, as each of these have become to define their market space as the best protocol. And again, we talked about transparency. We talked about, you know, how do you demonstrate a green building? Well, this is all about that process. We want our buildings that we manage for our clients to be the best that they can be. And these are the protocols that we've chosen to demonstrate that.
What is LEED EB?
LEED comes in different flavors. And basically, LEED is tailored to different kinds of buildings. And so we have what we call LEED NC, which would be LEED for new construction, and there's LEED for existing buildings, and as well as LEED for commercial interiors, neighborhood, schools, healthcare, and a range of other items, and so asset types, basically. And so the issue is that each of those phases in the life cycle of assets or types of buildings require some degree of change in the nature of the metrics. And so, for instance, for LEED for existing buildings, we evaluate energy efficiency in a different way than we do for new construction. And so those are the kinds of differences. And I believe in LEED version 4, we will be supporting over a dozen different asset flavors of LEED. So that's an important distinction. There's not just one LEED, there's many flavors of LEED.
And to expand, and for us, at managing a lot of existing buildings, when the protocol for LEED EB became formalized and really was something that we thought was really very helpful, that's when we got involved in it. And I'll tell the story here that we had a meeting with some folks at the USGBC a number of years ago, and we were talking about LEED EB, and I made a commitment that we would get 100 buildings LEED EB certified. When we were done with the meeting and later in the afternoon, my team asked me, do you know what you just did? And I said, well, yeah, I think so. We're going to get 100 buildings. And no, you don't understand. And they went back and they pulled up, at that time, the whole portfolio of LEED EB certified buildings in the world, and there were 57. So I had, and most of them were corporate headquarters or were buildings that were government and or educational in nature or whatever. To our recollection, to our looking at it, we couldn't really see any that were third-party multi-tenant office buildings in the world. So I had just committed to do 100 of something that had never been done. And I'm proud to say that, again, as I mentioned earlier, that we are quickly approaching 200 over the maybe six-year period or so that we've done it. So my group fortunately cashed the check that my mouth wrote.
Well, that's good. And you say that you're just the common man. I wouldn't go there. All right, let's talk a little bit about how sustainability, USGBC, and GRESB all, how does all of that have to do with appraisals now, and has there been any inroads? And David, why don't we start with you, and then we can go to Nils and Chris.
And we had this conversation that we think, you know, obviously that green buildings are worth more. We talked about some of the academic study that's been out there and some of the study that we've actually participated in with some of the academics that demonstrates that these buildings, these greener buildings, do perform better, higher occupancies, higher rental rate achievements, and consistently is demonstrated in a number of studies. They also perform somewhat better on operating expenses. It isn't quite a linear expression on that because sometimes they are more aggressively managed and there are some costs that are higher. But the bottom line is that we think that these buildings should cost a little bit less to run and should get higher occupancy, higher rental rate and achievement, and which should lead to higher value. And I think all of that is kind of happening, but the problem is we don't yet have quite enough study set to really get that inbred into the appraisal process to the degree that we think that it will be in time. And I know that Chris and Nils both have some thoughts on that as well from our conversation yesterday, so I'll let them add in.
Chris, why don't we start with you, because I may have to take a break just before we get to Nils, and I didn't want to have you hold your breath again.
No problem. Really quickly, I think that appraisal and valuation are central. We want to be able to demonstrate that when buildings are performing exemplary on additional dimensions of performance, energy efficiency, water, waste, human comfort, productivity, we want to be able to value that. One of the challenges we've had is, as Nils was saying, back in the day, 15 years ago, or as Dave was saying, every project was a new thing, and there wasn't the kind of data that appraisers and valuation professionals use in their day-to-day work to establish comps and set up the basis for quantitative valuation. Today, that's changed. Today, we have tens of thousands of different kinds of green buildings, and increasingly, through the work of folks like Nils and others, we are able to begin to see how we're going to support these kind of green attributes in the valuation process. That is, we're really at an inflection point. We now have critical mass of project experience and transactional histories that are going to let us do that work for real. That really wasn't the case 5 or 10 years ago.
We need to take a break. Nils, it's time for you to hold your breath. And as soon as we come back, we're going to hear your thoughts on that. And then we're going to begin wrapping everything up with a surprise question for all three of you. But actually, if you've heard my show before, you probably would have heard this question. So why don't we take a break? And when we come right back, we'll hear from Nils Koch.
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. tacticsmagazine.com.
Attention commercial real estate brokers and professionals. Have you ever struggled to find the true ownership behind a commercial property? What about finding the phone number, email, and name of the actual decision maker? ProspectNow.com tracks this information on more than 10 million commercial and multifamily properties nationwide. Howard's listeners are invited to a 3-day free trial. Simply go to ProspectNow.com and enter the promotion code Howard.
That's ProspectNow.com.
For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at CREradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio. Or via email to questions@CREradio.com.
And welcome back to CRE Radio. We're talking about demystifying green buildings and protocols. Nils, I hope you've taken a breath by now. What are your thoughts as to where we are at in the appraisal process and applying sustainability efforts?
Well, if you simplify evaluation, there's two ingredients. There's the income, the rent roll, and there's the risk that's reflected in the cost of capital in the cap rate. And if you think about how sustainability can influence both, well, there's two ways to look at this. So sustainable buildings might have a stronger rent roll or a weaker rent roll through occupancy, through rental levels that are achieved. There's research that actually shows that occupancy rates are a little higher in green buildings, or if you turn it around, a little lower in non-green buildings. There's research that actually shows that rental rates differ between the two. And on the cap rate side, there hasn't been a lot of research just on REITs that actually show that greener REITs are slightly less risky. So that would translate into a lower cap rate. I think there's been a lot of academic research, but in practice, appraisers are already taking sustainability into account, albeit not explicitly. They do take it into account implicitly through looking at the rent roll, through looking at the liquidity of the asset. And those factors are influenced by sustainability because the better tenants, the higher quality tenants, actually sort into green buildings. The government wants to be in a green building. I'm not sure whether the U.S. government is considered a AAA tenant, but that's another conversation. PricewaterhouseCoopers wants to be in a green building. Well, that's certainly considered a AAA tenant. So by the nature of the sort of tenants that green buildings attract, by nature of their positioning as it regards regulatory risk, they should be less exposed to that. By nature of the fact that a more efficient building is hedged to some extent against increasing energy prices. And energy prices, even though inflation is low, do increase typically by more than inflation. That should all be reflected in the valuation. And it is reflected. It's just not being recognized as green or sustainable. But I not only think, but I'm sure that if you look at the valuations of two comparable buildings, and that's, of course, difficult, one is green and the other is non-green, that you will see differences. Subtle differences, not attributed directly to the fact that one building is green and the other building is not, but you will see the differences. And those differences will become bigger, and they will be more explicitly attributed to the green factors going forward.
Yeah, I'm confident that in the not too distant future, we will be there. So, Chris, I have a question for you now. This is the surprise question. If there was one thing that our listeners should take away from this show, what would that be?
Oh, my goodness. I think that there's one thing. I think that there's the recognition that green building is an opportunity to create value through competitive differentiation, and that green building is a business strategy. It is something that can be deployed strategically to reposition assets to create value, and that's something to take away. And I think that whether that is occurring at the single asset or at the portfolio scale, I think we're moving into an era of green as a business strategy, and the best actors are such as the other folks on the phone are able to help do that.
Chris and Nils, I don't mean any disrespect to the two of you, but I'm going to leave David for last on this question. I'm going to give him a little bit more time, and that's only because he's the one who helped put this show together. So I'm going to do this out of deference for him. So, Nils, you're next. What's the one takeaway that the listeners should take from this show?
Yeah, and I'm not going to steal the thunder for Dave, but what he might say is that green building is no longer on the fringe, but it's mainstream. And when I talk to investors and when I talk to at investor conferences, there's often the feeling that, well, green building is a hype and it will go away. And this is a traditional industry. But green building is no longer a hype. But green building is there. And together with CBRE, we're working on a study that shows the diffusion and the uptake of green building in the major markets in the U.S. And this is not just 1% of the market, but this is more 20, 30% of the market by square footage. It's now LEED certified or ENERGY STAR certified. So green building is getting mainstream. It's having already its implications on the pricing of real estate, both at the asset and the portfolio level. It's here to stay, and more will come in the not-too-distant future.
Now, David, it's now your turn, but don't talk about how green has become part of the mainstream because Nils didn't take your thunder away.
Thank you for making me laugh, because, you know, there's only so much you can say about this topic. Well, I'm going to do a bit of an iteration on what Nils did say, because that was kind of the direction I was going to go in. But it's been interesting to see the growth of this, and to see how it's kind of in some ways been almost a stealth sort of operation. There was an awful lot of interest around this and buzz maybe 5 years ago, where people were beginning to get on board. And then we had the economic crash of 2008, 2009. And in some ways, it looked like maybe the bloom was off a little bit of this, that people were worried about survivability and not so much about sustainability. And the U.S. economy, the U.S. market, people in the United States generally, we have a relatively short attention span on anything. So sustainability had its time, okay? 2007, 2008, it was a big deal. Carbon laws were passing, going through Congress that didn't quite get there. And then we turned our attention on to other things. But the thing that I find is interesting is that while people think that the interest was moved to other areas, what has been happening at a structural level has fundamentally changed the way real estate is being offered to the market. If you go back to the year 2000, you will see that there was not a foot of LEED certified space anywhere, that there were fewer than 500 ENERGY STAR labeled buildings, that GRESB didn't exist, that things like GRI, the Global Reporting Initiative, which is another reporting protocol that companies report to, It was in its first year, and there were only 14 companies that reported. And CDP, another global protocol, Carbon Disclosure Project, was still in formation. So if you go back just that short a time frame to where we are today in 2013, there are now, it's approaching 2 billion square feet, and I hear different things on what the LEED is, but the billions of square feet of property is now LEED certified. There are hundreds of thousands of buildings that are ENERGY STAR that are benchmarked, and tens of thousands of buildings have ENERGY STAR label. There are now 9 cities or states that are requiring disclosure. GRESB does exist, and last year, I'll be wrong probably on the exact number here, but Nils, I think it was $1.7 trillion of world funds were represented in GRESB. Last year, 3,600 companies reported their results to GRI, and 775 companies did to CDP. All but one of the Fortune 500, or rather of the S&P 500 in the United States, all but one company reported to either one or both of those reporting protocols. The SEC has ruled that you, as a publicly traded company, now have to comment on global climate change as part of your risk profile. So what appeared to be kind of underground and things were quiet, and all of a sudden we see that this is standard. This is now, if you have 200,000 buildings that are reporting their results to ENERGY STAR, you have billions of square feet that are built to LEED certification, you have trillions of dollars that are reporting to the GRESB protocol. This is mainstream. It's quietly become the norm. And as the final piece I'll say here is, as Nils said, just a bit of a tease here on one of the things that we've done. We created something called the Real Green Research Challenge, and we have supported academics on a variety of kind of concepts. And one of them was Nils. And the work that he has done is help us create a green building adoption index. And we're going to be putting that out probably January or so of this year. And it's surprising. I've begun to see some of the data. And as Nils suggests, it isn't 1% or 2%. It's 30% or 35% by square footage in many major markets that are now either LEED certified or ENERGY STAR labeled. So this is not just a kind of starting kind of thing. It's now. It is the reality. It is the new reality in commercial real estate. So that's what I'll leave you with.
I'd like to thank all three of you, not for just being on the show, but I think really for helping to make what David was talking about a reality. So everybody should applaud you for your great efforts. I personally do, and my children do also. So I'd like to thank you. Mm-hmm. Now, I'd like to ask each of you how to get in contact with you. Nils, why don't we start with you? What's the best way to get in contact with you or GRESB?
So you could do two things. You could go to gresb.com, that's gresb.com, or you could go to nilskok.com, and Nils is N-I-L-S-K-O-K, so that's easy. And both will give you what you're looking for.
And Chris, what about you?
Well, I think the best way to connect with our work is to visit the website my team maintains, which is the Green Building Information Gateway, gbig.org, gbig.org. Also keep up with us on Twitter. Follow me at Chris Pike, C-H-R-I-S-P-Y-K-E, on Twitter.
Yeah, and I just connected to you on Twitter. Did you follow me back?
I will.
Yeah, okay. And Dave, how about you?
Well, I would almost say, please don't contact me. you know, unfortunately, what winds up happening is that I get 35 calls or emails from lighting companies who want to sell me new lighting,
gosh,
or they have the next best product in the market. And there are so many next best products in the market that I am not smart enough, nor do I have the time or capability to vet any of this stuff. And again, we're just a service provider, so we never endorse products particularly. We like to endorse things like LEED or GRESB. But so, you know, if anyone does want to talk to me about anything, I can be reached at dave.pogue, P-O-G-U-E, at cbre.com. But if you're trying to sell me something, I may not respond
back
to
you. Yeah, and I don't blame you. I get plenty of that also. Does anyone have any appearances or speaking engagements coming up? I know that probably all three of you do. Chris, why don't we start with you?
That's a low-hanging one. Well, I hope that, many of your listeners are going to join us in Philadelphia next week at the Green Build Conference. We will have a jam-packed session talking about all aspects of green building throughout the week. And folks might want to turn out to if they're on the policy wonk, they can hear Hillary Clinton on Thursday night or Bon Jovi later that evening. So pick your pleasure right there.
I wish I could make it, Dave.
Well, I am going to make it. I'll say hi to everyone in your stead then, because I will be meeting up with Chris at Green Build in Philadelphia next week, and I'm actually appearing on a breakfast panel with a couple of my industry colleagues on the state of sustainability in commercial real estate. But then I'm going to Hawaii and taking some time off. So.
Okay, well, I will meet you there. And Nils, what about you?
Well, I don't have either Hillary Clinton or Bon Jovi to tease you to come to my panel. I was at Nareit's conference today, and I'll be back there later today. It's the annual gathering of all the real estate investment trusts. And I will be next week at the Behavior and Energy Conference in Sacramento, which I think is a very interesting conference on how you can actually influence the behavior of occupants in reducing their energy consumption. And big utilities and companies like Opower will be there to convince you of how they've been able to do that.
Hey, that's another whole topic for your show, Howard.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I wish I could go to all of these things. All I do is learn, and that's what my radio show is about. I think it's more about me learning than it is about me helping educate other people. So talking about, I mean that sincerely. All I do is learn doing this. So for me... gosh, I got a couple of things coming up next year. I don't have any appearances this year, but we do have a couple of shows coming up. State of Commercial Appraisal, that'll be on December 14th. And in that particular case, we will be talking about how appraisal relates to sustainability with some of our experts there. We're also going to be doing something, a focus on letters of intent, property management best practices for multifamily properties, Google Plus Hangouts for real estate professionals. I'm a bit of a techie for anybody out there who doesn't know that. And social media for property managers adding value. And we're currently in the process of scheduling about 10 additional shows. So we're going to be very busy in 2014, and we have some exciting new concepts that we're going to be bringing to the table. With that being said, and I say that for my producer, Mike, who hates when I always say that. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Wonderful show. I really enjoyed it myself, and I hope everyone else did. Thank you very much.
And
thank you, Howard. Take care.
And all travel safely, and we'll be talking shortly. Now, Roger, take it away.
Please listen again next time to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Every live and recorded broadcast is accessible on your desktop, tablet, or smartphone at creradio.com or in iTunes, just search for CRE Radio. Here's how to reach us with your questions, feedback, and show topics you'd like to hear about. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CRE Radio. Via email to questions@CREradio.com or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented on an informational basis only, with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our listeners. Howard and his guests' conversations specifically do not offer legal advice. If you need legal advice, please consult your own attorney. Portions of the show may have been pre-recorded. Unauthorized editing or copying of the show without the express written consent of CRE Radio is strictly prohibited. All rights reserved.
And that's a wrap.